It has been described that in the act of devotion, that when Bhakti Lata Beej, the seed of devotional creeper, sprouts into a seedling, and two leaves come out of that seedling, from that seedling. And one of the leaves is Kleshagni, and the other one is Shubhada. So as devotion, the seed of devotion fructifies in our heart, it, in one hand, it destroys all suffering, kleshas, and it brings all auspiciousness. Kleshagni, Shubhada. So when all the distresses disappear, and when all auspiciousness appear, then life must be free from miseries. Not only free, in one hand it becomes completely free from miseries, and all the good things start to happen. That is the natural, immediate outcome of devotional service. Surrender to Krishna and all kinds of wonderful things will start to happen. One may question, well, there is disease, ailments, other kinds of distresses that the devotees go through. Yeah, apparently they come and go, but they don't affect the devotees. That is the result of acceptance of devotional service. Devotees also become sick. Devotees also go through difficulties. But those sickness and difficulties do not affect the devotee. They are totally unaffected by that. They remain totally unaffected by that. How? Only a devotee knows. Because he sees how. He is not affected at all. Because he has taken shelter of Krishna. The various reasons. Because he has taken shelter of Krishna, Krishna actually takes care of all that. Like for example, if you have some bad debts, but your father gets to know about this, and the father says, don't worry, I'll take care of those bad debts. And you become, although you are responsible for those bad debts, but your father is there to take care of. This is how, by taking shelter of Krishna, one becomes free from anxiety, free from distresses, free from miseries. And another way a devotee doesn't become unaffected by that, doesn't remain unaffected by that, is by becoming aware of the fact that he is not the body, and all those distresses and difficulties are pertaining to the body, and he is not the body. So he doesn't become affected by that. It is not that the moment you become a devotee, distresses and difficulties won't be there. We can see that they are very much there, but they don't affect them. Their consciousness remains unaffected by that. Just like when a patient under anesthetics is being operated, his ribs are priced open, his heart is taken out. But does he feel anything? He doesn't feel anything. Why? Because his consciousness is not there. Anesthetics ceases the consciousness to flow through the nervous system. They numb the nervous system, and as a result of that, the consciousness will be withdrawn from the body. Now, through anesthetics, it is done artificially, but in Krishna consciousness, it happens naturally. Krishna consciousness, yes, you are conscious, but where is your consciousness? Your consciousness is with Krishna, at Krishna, at Krishna's lotus feet. It is not in the body anymore. So that is how Krishna consciousness causes us to become free from all the effects of the suffering. That's why Srila Prabhupada was so much Srila Prabhupada gave so much emphasis on the simple point. You are not this body. You are a spirit soul. We are not our bodies. We are spirit souls. We are not our bodies. It's not just a theoretical thing. We are not our bodies. In Krishna consciousness we practically realize that. We are not. We are just wearing the body. We are not the body. Just as we are wearing these shirts, wearing these clothes. So, this is how Krishna consciousness is real. Krishna consciousness is not just some theoretical, sentimental process. When one takes to Krishna consciousness, he transcends the suffering condition. So how are you doing? I'm sure you're doing very well in Krishna consciousness. Now, I had a counter question, how I am doing. I am also doing fine. I mean, you may consider, we know that we have some difficulties. But the good news is that, yes, I had some physical difficulties about 2 years back. Well, almost 2.5 years ago. And it caused some, did cause some physical ailments and difficulties, but at the same time I had some very wonderful realizations through that difficulty. And the realization was, one of the realizations which I often remember and repeat is that I became aware that when a poor man has a car, he uses the car until the car becomes ready for junkyard. Whereas when a rich man has a car, he, even though the car is in functioning in perfect condition, but a new model comes out, he discards that one and gets a new one. Now, we are neither a rich man nor a poor man. We are neither the rich man nor the poor man. We are actually the chauffeurs of the richest personality. And we are driving his car. So yes, as the car of the master, we take care of the car, we drive it very carefully for the pleasure of the master, for the service of the master. And when the master decides to change the model, we say, fine. And we know that when he changes the model, he is going to go for a better one. So we are just, this body is, doesn't belong to us, it's a machine, it's like a car, Jantra Rudhani Maya. But this is not our bodies. This body, our bodies, actually belong to the Master, to whom we have surrendered ourselves. So we recognize that it belongs to him. And we use it for his pleasure, for his service, for his sake. And yes, we take care of it, just as a chauffeur takes care of the car of his master. But when he would want to change the model, we will say, yes, sir. And accept the new model, getting rid of the old one. So, this realization, I think, was one of the biggest reward from the ailment that I went through at the time. And I pray to Srila Prabhupada that I can function, I can act upon that realization. And because I had the history of this heart problem in the past, recently when I had some little pain here and there, everybody became very alert, everybody became very concerned. So I had to go through various tests, I mean all kinds of tests you can think of. The first test is ECG, electrocardiograph. And then they put me through a test called echocardiograph. Then they put me through a test called thallium test. And they were not satisfied with that. Then they put me to the final test, which is called angiogram. They pierce through your artery and go to the region of your, they pass the catheter with the camera to the region of your heart. Not a camera actually, they put some dye. It's a chemical to put in your heart, and then they take the camera from outside, the photograph, and that shows, not from outside, I think they do it from inside, anyway, that shows which arteries are open, which arteries are blocked, from the movement of that dye. And so it's called angiogram. And this time when they decided to do angiogram, and so many devotees were telling me that I should have go through the angioplasty, and that kind of, when the, that is a procedure whereby they open up the blocked arteries with a thing called balloon, like literally with a balloon they open it up, they make it expand. And then they put a stent, it's a metal body, to keep the artery open so that the blood can flow properly. And so we, so when they decided to do angiogram, then I was asked whether, if necessary, they would also do the angioplasty, which is putting the stent in the artery, blocked artery. And it's a very common thing, they told me. It was a very common thing. But I didn't like the idea at the first place, 2.5 years ago when I had the heart problem, because Srila Prabhupada didn't want to have any foreign element in his body. Prabhupada didn't even want a needle to pierce his body. Prabhupada didn't want anything to... He told me twice that if he became unconscious, he should... that he should be taken to the hospital. He very clearly told us. And he told us that nothing should penetrate his body. Prabhupada didn't want even a needle to penetrate his body. And here, a foreign body right in my heart. Like, I just couldn't accept that. I thought, why make all these artificial arrangements to extend your stay in this terrible place for a little longer? And so, at the first place, I was quite reluctant to have the angioplasty. But this time, since everybody was telling me that angioplasty is a very common thing, how many of you have angioplasty? Premrita, did you have? Okay, you have. Okay, in this room, we can see everybody's already. So I've been told that it's a very common thing, and whenever there is some heart problem, they just do that, and they wanted to subject me also to that treatment last time. So this time I thought, okay, since they're doing angiogram, I'll do it, because it's just, I mean, half the procedure is already there, made there, and it's just a matter of doing a few more things. Opening up the blocked heart, blocked artery, and putting the stent. It's just a matter of another 10-15 minutes of work. So I was agreeable to that. But when they... Actually, this operation was done by one of the best cardiologists, not only in India, he's rated as one of the best cardiologists in the world. One Dr. Ashok Seth from Delhi. And so he, when he did the angiogram, you see, when they do the angiogram, you can even see in the monitor, in the TV, what's happening. And so I was watching my inside. And then the doctor just told me that there's no need for angioplasty. And he told me that last time my blockage was, the Indian doctors told that it was 40% blockage in one of the main arteries. And the expert in London said it was more than 70%. And he was ready to just put a stent on me. But Dr. Ashok said that now it's only worth 20%. So medical science generally says, modern medical science generally says that the arteries don't get cleared. When they're blocked, they don't get cleared. But here at least it got cleared from 40% to 20%. And it has raised the assessment of one of the best cardiologists. So much so that when I was ready for going for angioplasty, he decided that I didn't need one. Rameshwar, you remember, you know? Like he was almost sending me right to the... Then he convinced Rameshwar also. Like, you went and who else went? Haribabsu went also. Anyway, whoever you...
Radha
Vinod was there, yeah. And anyway, so... And as I said, like, whatever Krishna wants, if Krishna wants to remain in this body for a long, long time, we say fine. But if Krishna says, okay, now you have to go to another region, and for that region you need another type of body, we say fine. So it's all Krishna's desire that we have to work on. I was told that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur once commented, he was looking at the moon and he said that the residents of moon are giving up Krishna consciousness. The residents of moon are becoming un-Krishna conscious. He just commented that, and soon after that he left his body. So some of his intimate disciples surmised from that, that he actually went to the moon planet to preach. So whenever Krishna wants us to render service, we'll go, and sometimes we have to change our dress to wear the right uniform for the right place. So we'll do that according to the need of the moment. And as long as we are in this body, we must make it a point to render this body in the service of Krishna. Actually, we have three bodies. We have gross material body, we have subtle material body, and then we have spiritual. But somehow, now, we lost our spiritual identity. We forgot about our spiritual body. And we are in our gross, we are entrapped in our gross and subtle material bodies. This is the gross body, made of five gross elements. And we have another body made of three subtle elements. The gross body dies. That means at one point we leave the soul leaves the gross body. We call it death. When the soul leaves the gross body, gross material body, the gross material body becomes dead. It's the body that dies. Death is the departure of the soul from the body. The gross material body dies all of a sudden like that, when the soul leaves the body, but the subtle material body. The subtle material body carries the soul to the next body. So anyway, now that we are entrapped in this material bodies, the only recourse we have open to us is to use this in Krishna's service. Our business is to use everything in Krishna's service. And by engaging these bodies in the service of Krishna, we become free from the bondage of this body. That's the only way we can become free from the bondage of this body. Otherwise, we all are actually tied down to this material nature by these bodies. These bodies are actually our chain, our cause of our imprisonment. So we have, this is the cause of our imprisonment in this material nature. Material nature is the prison house, and the souls are capsuled in this body and kept in this material nature. Now, the only way we can become free from the bondage of the body is by engaging the body in the service of Krishna. Both the gross material body as well as the subtle material body. The gross material body we engage in directly in the service of Krishna, or rendering service through this body. And the mind is engaged in service of Krishna, or the subtle body is engaged in the service of Krishna by thinking about Krishna all the time. The principal aspect of the subtle body is the mind. And along with that, there is intelligence and false ego. Very subtle. But we have to start operating from the mental platform. Use the mind in thinking of Krishna. Manmanava. And the gross body should be engaged in serving Krishna. Three aspects: mind, body, and words. We have another faculty, speech. So the speech must be used in glorifying Krishna. So when the speech is engaged in glorifying Krishna, then other two aspects becomes conducive to that process. Then mind automatically begins to think of Krishna, and the body, the hands and legs and all the other parts of the body is engaged in the service of Krishna. So in this way, when we become engaged in the service of Krishna, our existence in the material nature, through these material means of the bodies, become meaningful. And the ultimate consideration is to leave the body. The ultimate consideration is to leave the body thinking about Krishna, singing the glory. That's the ultimate perfection. And actually our life is a preparation for that. There is only, the ultimate point of our existence is death. We are dealing with the absolute truth. We are dealing with the absolute. In this material nature, which is actually relative, in this material nature everything is relative. But there is one absolute truth in this material nature. What is that absolute truth in our material existence? Death. At least we know that someday we all have to die. And our life is actually a preparation to reach that point and act in a perfect way. That is actually the purpose of our existence in this material nature. In that sense, Krishna consciousness is actually teaching us the art of dying. It is an art of dying. It's teaching us how to die. And if we die properly, if we master the art of dying, then we achieve immortality. Then we don't have to die anymore. And the life is actually preparation, just like throughout the year we study to sit for the exams at the end of the year in our education system. We study throughout the year to sit for the exams at the end of the year. Similarly, our life is actually meant to prepare ourselves for that final exams. When will we have to sit for the ultimate exams, the final exams? At the time of death? And that is the purpose of our existence and how we have to live our life. Mastering the art of offering ourselves to Krishna, which will begin from the body, from the mind, from the world, these three aspects. Karmana, manasa, gira. Karmana, body's business is to act. Karma. Mind business is to think, manasa. And gira, the faculty to speak, is meant for glorifying Krishna. So in the body we must act. We must act to serve Krishna. With our words we must act to glorify Krishna. With our mind we must act to think of Krishna. If we can properly execute these three functions, then we will achieve perfection at the end of our existence. And is it a lone journey? No. Krishna is always there to help. And when we take to the process, when we start to act with this conviction, then we see how Krishna is actually helping. Time and time again, we become aware, yes, Krishna is there, he is helping. And we have to have that conviction, yes, Krishna will help. He will help. First conviction is that this process works. We shouldn't have any doubt about it. This process works. If I properly act, it will work. It will have its ultimate result. And then we have to consider that Krishna will help. But before that, before you actually recognize that Krishna is personally helping, we see that how the devotees are helping us. It is not actually a lone journey. It is a collective endeavor. And it is Krishna's help that comes out in different forms. Krishna helps as the initiating spiritual master. Krishna helps as the instructing spiritual master. Diksha Guru, Shiksha Gurus. And the fellow devotees. Like I have seen, like devotees who even left Krishna consciousness. They went away. They became very fallen, very degraded. Completely rejected Krishna consciousness. But At some point they realized that their life is coming to an end. And at that point those devotees came back to Krishna consciousness, came back in the association of devotees. And when they left their body, they left their bodies surrounded by devotees chanting the holy name and remembering Krishna, chanting his holy name, they left their bodies. Where did they go when one leaves his body in this way? So what to speak of the devotees who are sincerely practicing this process of Krishna consciousness throughout their life without any deviation? What kind of reward they will receive? Krishna will personally come. And what will be the death like at that time when one acts with such conviction throughout his life? Throughout his life he is practicing to remember Krishna at the time of death. And then the time of death comes and he remembers Krishna. Then what happens? Krishna just appears. Now how will he leave his body at that time? Will he feel any attachment? Will he feel any pain? Will he feel any inconvenience? No. He'll see Krishna is standing there. Krishna is standing. Come. Now let's go. And you'll notice the face of a devotee after he left their bodies, after he leaves his body. I have noticed that the devotee's face look like as if they're smiling. That shows how joyfully they have left their body. So this is the wonderful gift that we have received from Srila Prabhupada. ISKCON is here to teach everybody the art of dying. There are some organizations that are teaching the art of leaving, art of living. But our business is to master the art of dying. Leave, even a dog knows how to live. Eating, sleeping, mating, defending, even animals can do it better than the men. That's not a big deal. What you really have to understand, what you really have to master is the art of dying. And we have seen like how real this process is. We have seen how devotees, they transcend their body and form. In this respect, I often remember His Holiness Bhaktivedanta Maharaj. Maharaj is going through so many difficulties, physical difficulties. But he was not at all affected by that. His body was in a very, very critical condition. I used to get the report. But when you would phone him and speak to him, I didn't even want to disturb him. I just wanted to have the information from his secretaries, how he was doing. But whenever I called, every time, they immediately transferred the call to Maharaj. And I would speak to Maharaj, and his voice sounded absolutely normal. He was not at all affected by that, his condition of the body. Where otherwise probably an ordinary person, they would be crying out of pain and the doctor would be giving them morphine and other sedatives to forget the pain. But he was not at all affected, and that is the proof that he was not at all in the body consciousness. He transcended the platform, bodily platform, and he was in his pure spiritual consciousness. Only a devotee can act like that. And nobody can artificially fake it. One cannot, at that time you cannot pretend. It was totally unaffected. And about a week before Maharaj left his body, that's the last time I saw him. And when I went to see him, his left leg was already amputated. Doctor told him he had only a few days left. But what he was doing when I went there, he was giving dictations to his secretary, answering the letters that he received. Totally unaffected by the physical condition. And not only such exalted devotee like His Holiness Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj display this kind of transcending the bodily platform, transcending the body consciousness. Like even apparently ordinary devotees, like often I also remember Savitri Priya. She was not a big leader of the movement, she was just an ordinary housewife. She had cancer, and once I was speaking to Janava, and Janava just inquiring about her condition. I was in America at that time, and Janava told me that Savitri Priya had a dream, and in a dream she saw that I came to see her. When I heard that, I just decided, okay, if that's what she wanted, I'll go and meet her. So the next day I flew to London from America, and straight from the airport, I was actually supposed to come. They arranged that I would go to the place where I was going to stay, and then in the afternoon after lunch I would go to see Savitri Priya. But I considered that I came to see her, so that's the first thing I would do. Like, straight from the airport I just went to her place. And I was told that she actually, literally, she had only a few more days left. And I thought that she would be completely bedridden. But when I went, yes, she was bedridden. But when I went there, she just got out of her bed and offered me obeisances in spite of my repeatedly telling her not to do that. But she was adamant. She just got out of her bed, offered obeisances. And so that is how we can see that how Krishna consciousness makes one transcend his bodily platform and come to the pure spiritual consciousness. And at that stage one is not really affected by the condition of the body. And we are seeing it time and time again. So many devotees are actually displaying this kind of spiritual awareness, spiritual transcending onto the spiritual platform, transcending the bodily platform and coming to the spiritual platform. It seems so many. Another example is Jayapataka Maharaj. When he got the stroke, I was there. Like from the time he got it, and we went to the hospital with him. And at first, when they took the preliminary test of his thing, they didn't see it was that serious. That was at about 5 o'clock in the morning. And then when the head of the department of cardiology department and neurosurgeon, two top doctors of the hospital, when they came and checked him, after taking the CT scan, they actually told us that he had stroke in the base of the spinal column, the brain. I forgot the name. Doctor, what's it called?
Brainstem.
No, the stem, in the stem, brainstem. So he actually had the stroke on the stem. And they say that there's nothing they can do about it. Had it been in any other place, no matter how severe it was, they could have had a surgery. But this stem of the brain is so critical that they don't even dare to touch that region. And they say that the chances of survival is very little. And they also told us that even if he survives, he will remain paralyzed. Anyway, that was his condition at that time. And then next few days we went through a very critical phase, like where the doctors even at some point, those experts even phoned us that we should be prepared that he'll leave his body at any moment. Now from that point, the way he reversed, the way he recuperated is unbelievable. And the doctors are saying it's a miracle. They can't actually justify, they can't explain how it happened. So this is how Krishna actually takes care of the devotees. They make them function, Krishna makes them function on a platform which is completely transcendent. But still we have the body, so what to do? Engage it in Krishna's service. And when something is engaged in Krishna's service, then what happens? When something is engaged in, when some material object is engaged in Krishna's service or offered to Krishna, what happens to that? Does it remain material? It becomes spiritualized. So this is how Krishna consciousness teaches us how to spiritualize our material body. Material bodies, gross and subtle. So Krishna consciousness is actually the most perfect process of transcending the bodily platform. Become free from the bondage of this matter, bondage of this material nature, and function on the spiritual platform, become situated on the spiritual platform. We do not actually have to go anywhere. We do not have to transfer ourselves to any other situation. Wherever we are, just we can remain in there. Whatever we are doing, we can continue to do that, but we can transform ourselves to spiritual. Like the examples we are seeing, like, as these two, three examples I gave, Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj in one hand, a very, very exalted devotee, with inconceivable achievements. Like the question arises, like, why did Krishna take him away at a time like this, when we really needed him so much? We have to accept that it's up to Krishna. The master will decide what he wants to do with his servant. If he wants to give his servant some special assignment, who are we to say, don't do that? So we have to accept Krishna's plans. And at the same time we can also see Savitri Priya, devotees like Savitri Priya. A simple housewife, nobody generally even thinks that she is such an exalted devotee. But Krishna consciousness made her pure deity. Prabhupada sometimes used to say that sadhan karo bhajan karo morte jan deyamai. Do your sadhana, do your bhajan, but the most important thing is to learn how to die. So that is the most important consideration. We have to learn how to die. And what's the way to die? Die remembering Krishna. And when we are alive, what should we do? Prepare ourselves for that. Practice so that we can remember Krishna at the time of death. With the understanding that death can come at any moment. So it's a preparation. What am I going to do if death comes now? What am I going to do? So this is how we have to constantly remind ourselves of our actual object. So I came after 9 months and all I'm speaking about is death. I wish I could speak of some more palatable subject, but what to do? This is our business. A devotee is like a doctor. Ordinary doctors treat the body, but the devotees treat the soul. Soul's doctor. We can stretch it to another point. A tailor, doctor, and preacher, they have the same occupation. A tailor stitches the cloth, doctor treats the body, and a preacher treats the soul. Devotee treats the soul. So that is why we are here. And we have to help each other in that process with that understanding. And when we have this objective fixed ahead of us, then we can transcend a lot of unnecessary petty things of this material. If we become fixed up on our goal, then all these trivial, mundane affairs and agendas will just become insignificant. If we remember that someday we are going to die, the death may come tomorrow, so why unnecessarily waste our time to make some arrangements in this place which is a temporary place to begin with? In this way, today I was discussing with some devotees and the word politics came up. Politics. And I recall Prabhupada gave a very unique definition of the word politics. Do you know what was Prabhupada's definition of politics? Prabhupada's definition of politics was the dubious arrangements for sense gratification. It's all arrangement for sense gratification. But why waste time on this sense gratification when the real business is far more serious, far more serious than that? In this respect, I remember when I became a devotee, one day I was standing in front of Radha Madhava in Mayapur. And an overwhelming feeling came to me. that that here is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He has created everything. He is maintaining everything. And I'm just standing in front of Him. And I can actually ask Him for anything and He will. He can grant it to me. And I was thinking, what should I ask? And different thoughts flashed across my mind. Can I ask this? Can I ask that? And the answers were no, no, no. Because I was thinking that I make Krishna will give it. But what if I die tomorrow? Krishna can make me the king of this planet. But what if I die tomorrow? What's the point in becoming a king? Krishna may give so many things, Krishna may give. And then it just dawned on me that the only thing to ask from Krishna is dedication, dedicated service to His lotus feet. That life after life we can remain engaged in serving His lotus feet. And that is the perfection of life. Compared to that, everything else is absolutely insignificant. Why unnecessarily waste our valuable opportunity that we have in something that is so trivial, something that is so insignificant, something that is so temporary? We must go for the real thing. We must go for the permanent benefit, not temporary benefit, transient benefit. Permanent benefit is devotional service to His lotus feet, life after life. A devotee doesn't even care for liberation. As a matter of fact, liberation personified Mukti Devi with folded hands stands in front of devotees asking, please somehow engage me in your service. So Mukti Devi with folded hands is begging to serve the devotees. So why should devotees separately ask for liberation, mukti? Mukti is a side effect of bhakti. Without even asking for it, it has already appeared, or it has already come. This is how precious bhakti is. And bhakti is synonymous to prem. Bhakti means love to Krishna. And this prem is synonymous to ananda. Or prem is source of ananda. So when you have ananda, when you have joy, then what else do you need? Actually, everything that you are asking for is to get that ananda. Why people want money? Why people want beautiful women? Why people want all these material possessions? Simply to get, they think by getting that they'll get ananda. But when you have ananda, then what's the point in getting all this, asking for all these things? When you've got the ultimate objective, then why look for some means to get that? Why separately ask for the means when you have already reached the end? So everyone is actually, every single entity, every living entity is searching for ananda. Whatever he is doing is for the sake of that ananda. And the only way we can get ananda is by loving Krishna. That love is the fountainhead of ananda. So let's go for the real stuff. Srila Prabhupada has showed us the way, and now let's just follow the path. Hare Krishna, all glory is to Srila Prabhupada. Does anybody have any question or comment or complain? Yes. How do we know we are prepared? No, we'll not know, but we have to prepare ourselves. We have to continue to prepare. We should never think that now I am prepared, right? But we should aspire, we should hope that, let me be prepared. Am I prepared? That should be the question. If we think that, oh, now I am prepared, then we may fail. But we should be always ready to be prepared. If it comes now, what am I going to do? Right? Like, what am I, if death comes now, what am I going to do? Am I going to think of something else? Or am I going to think of Krishna? And the first great consideration will be whether I'm going to think of Krishna now. Now that death has come, how am I going to think of Krishna? And not allow any other thoughts to come to my mind. And the wonderful thing is that when we surrender to Krishna, then Krishna helps. Just like a sincere student. When the teacher sees that the student is sincere, the teacher goes out of his way to help the student. Even better example will be, the son has gone away from the father. And when the son wants to come back to the father, how will the father react? Will the father leave it entirely up to the son? Oh, now you want to come back, you buy your train ticket or you get your plane fare and come. No, the son simply writes to the father, rich father. Daddy, I want to come back to you. I'm sorry that I made a mistake and I left you. Then what will the father do? The father will send his private jet to pick him up. Isn't it? So that is how Krishna wants to take us back to him. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Yes? No, who said that?
A devotee yesterday.
Why not? Then if it is so precious, if it is not possible, then why Krishna is offering it to us?
He said the human body is not capable of experiencing such.
Therefore don't remain in the bodily platform. The question was that he commented that he heard from somebody that Prema Bhakti is not available in this human form. So, and then he said that the human body is not meant to experience Prema Bhakti. So my answer to that was, then don't remain in the human bodily platform. Yeah, come to the spiritual platform. This is, yes, Prema is the natural characteristic of the swing. Yeah, you have to come to your spiritual identity to experience prema. But the human body is a wonderful opportunity to come to that. Human body, and then what happens, as Prabhupada said, that iron and fire. When the soul becomes pure, purified, then the body, when the soul becomes spiritualized or becomes situated in a spiritual, pure spiritual identity, then the body is also spiritualized. Then that body is not material. And in this respect, Prabhupada gives the example of iron and fire. When the iron becomes red hot in contact with fire, is it iron or fire? Fire. So when, by proper practice of sadhana bhakti, of Krishna consciousness, one becomes situated in a spiritual identity, then his body is also spiritual. The pure devotee's body is spiritual. spiritualized. All the apparently material. Yes.
Do I have a chance to go back to Krishna without spiritual master?
The first answer, immediate answer will be no. Just like something like, can I become a PhD without going through any teacher? Can you master a subject without the guidance of a teacher? So, the thing is that, yes, for spiritual progress you need not only a spiritual master, you need many, many spiritual masters. And those spiritual masters are actually the embodiment of Krishna. That is how it has been described. Krishna is helping. Who is the ultimate spiritual master? Who is the ultimate spiritual master? Yes, how? As the super soul, Chaitanya Guru. He is there with the soul all the time, waiting for the soul to turn towards him. But as long as the soul cannot really directly communicate with him, he actually makes all these arrangements. He sends the spiritual master to guide him. But who is the spiritual master? The spiritual master is actually the external manifestation of the super soul. He may appear to be like an ordinary person, but a disciple should not consider him to be an ordinary person. He even may say that he is an ordinary person. He may say that I'm just an ordinary person. And he thinks that way. But the disciple's business is to see him as the manifestation of the super soul, Krishna, externally appear to help him to go back to him. Thank you. Hare Krishna.